Rishus Marina, Rav Shlita. We are one day away from Tisha B'Av, so we're reflecting on the Churban Beis Hamikdash and our hope that it will be speedily rebuilt in our days. And Rabbeinu Bechaya writes at the end of Vayakhel that one who learns about Karbonos is as if he's brought Karbonos, and one who learns about the Beis Hamikdash is as if he's visited it, done a L'Regel, and one who mourns the destruction will merit to see the rebuilding. So what better subject is there to speak about something which is very practical nowadays in Halacha, when currently in the news you hear daily stories about people trying to get on the Temple Mount. They won't allow the Jews to pray, and they allow the Muslims to pray, and they're arguing about human rights and all this kind of thing. And we have to understand what is the halacha, because there is a lot of confusion around at the moment. I remember in 1967, when we were on a geography field trip of Hasmonean Grammar School, in the Cotswolds, I think it was, and Alan Kimcha, now Rabbi Alan Kimcha, was the one bold person he brought with a transistor radio, and we heard up in the hills that Jerusalem had been liberated. The old city became ours, and there was obviously a great euphoria and a jubilation. And it was one thing to know that we can daven once to get the Kotel, but what was the situation on Har HaBayis? Well, immediately following the Six-Day War, the Rabbanut arranged to put up a notice. This was Rav Unterman and Rav Nissim. They put up a notice at the entrances of Har HaBayis warning Jewish people that they may not go up on the Temple Mount, and that there is a risk of an Issur Kares if they do so. And that notice stood in place for many years. It seems to have disappeared. And we're going to have to look at what is going on and why. Is it the case that one can go up there or one can't go up there? There is a lot of confusion about this. Now, it is true that even when Rav Yisrael Tomei, there may be certain instances when we may or even should go up there. The generally accepted view in 1967 was there's an Issur Kares to go on Har HaBayis. Don't go up there with Tomei Mace. And we need the Parah Adumah, we need the ashes of the red heifer in order to purify ourselves. And there's a posuk in Parshas Chukas, Le'isha she'itmo ve'lo yizchato v'nichraso, ha'nefesh ha'i mitocha kohol, ki es mikdash Hashem timei. Clear cut, as the posuk says, there in Bamidbar chapter 19, verse 20, you cannot go up on Har HaBayis because there's an Issur Kares, if you are indeed Tomei. And we haven't got the Parah Adumah, we haven't got the Red Cow. And what I was alluding to before was that if Rav Yisrael Tomei, you can bring, and perhaps you should even bring, the Korban Pesach. Because there is an explicit din, and this is brought down by Rabbi Akiva Rega, that if Rav Yisrael Tomei, you still bring the Korban Pesach. So now that we've liberated the old city of Jerusalem, why aren't we bringing the Korban Pesach? Well, there are a number of reasons given on that, which I learnt from Rav Shimon Weiser Shlita. Number one, we don't have proof nowadays as to who is a Kohen and who isn't. No disrespect to you, David, but we don't have definite proof. Oh yes, sorry, we've got a few Kohanim present. So we don't have definite proof. You can't produce any documentation to verify that you are indeed a Kohen, and we need to have the Mashiach to confirm to us who is entitled to practice the Avodah and who isn't. In addition to that, we don't have the Big Day Kohuna. In addition to that, we don't know the exact position of the Mizbeach, and we'll come to that in a moment. And the other thing is that although we managed to liberate the old city of Jerusalem, Har HaBayis is not really within our chazokah. It's occupied by the Muslims, and when it was liberated, Moshe Dayan, the then defense minister, tried to appease the Arabs and say, look, you just carry on as before, stay where you are, and good luck to you. Although, of course, we were claiming sovereignty. There is inevitably some elements of politics which come then into a subject such as this. When the mount was liberated, the chief chaplain to the Israel Defense Forces, Rabbi Goren, told a General Narcus who was in charge of the army unit there, he said, look, you won't be able to do it later, do it now, put a stick of 100 kilograms of dynamite in the Omar Mosque and just blow it up. Well, I was warned about saying this in a shir which might go on the internet, but if it's the case that Rabbi Gorin said this, and we don't have definite proof that he had, all the other rabbis were definitely against his view. When he pressed this general to do this, and he nagged him, the general said to him, listen, Rabbi, if you say this once more, I'll have you arrested and you'll be put into jail over this. Yes. Now, if it was reported in the Haaretz newspaper.
And
it was in his memoirs. Right. And when the chief rabbinate, Rav Unterman and Rav Nissim, put up this notice in 1967 telling people they may not go out on the Temple Mount, there were about 300 other rabbis who supported this and signed something similar, and Rabbi Gorin was the only one who dissented and would not dine. Indeed, Rabbi Gorin was even arguing that we should rebuild the Temple, which was quite surprising because it is accepted from the Sifri on the Pasuk L'shichno Sidrushu Vaso Shomo that we need a Novi in order to rebuild the Beis Hamikdash. Well, in any case, apart from that, even if that's the case, do we really know where the Har HaBayis is? That's the next question. Strangely, Rabbi Gorin dissented from the generally held view of the Radvaz that the Evin Shasiyah, the famous rock, which the Medrash says the whole world was built from, there is this rock inside the Mosque of Omar, which many believe is the Evin Shasiyah, and if you know where the Evin Shasiyah is, then you can work out all your measurements, because we've got the Evin Shasiyah was in...
It's with you when you
talk. Yeah. We got the Evin Shasiyah, if it is indeed in the middle of the Mosque of Omar, then you can work out from dimensions where Har HaBayis really is. Because the problem is this. King Herod, in wanting to magnify the size of Har HaBayis, built it up bigger. Perfect Har HaBayis is 500 amas by 500 amas. Although this black line is not a perfect square, it should be a perfect square. The Mishnah in Midrash tells us explicitly that Har HaBayis measures 500 cubits by 500 cubits. But the Har HaBayis as we have nowadays is much bigger. It's almost three times the size. It's shaped like a rectangle, which widens more at one end than the other end, more like a trapezium, you might say. And nobody really knows where the original Har HaBayis is. And this is really why those who are perhaps of the nationalist variety who claim that they've got a right to go up there, they're saying, well, we're not really going on Har HaBayis proper, we're going on the outskirts of it, which isn't part of the original Har HaBayis. But how do they know? There are certain scholars who you might find on the internet who do different diagrams to show different options as to where the original Har HaBayis was, but this is based on archaeological findings, not on halacha, and we don't paskin according to archaeology, and there is the problem that even the archaeologists admit they don't really know where the original Har HaBayis was. So, hence the Sophic which comes into it. If we just look at the basic principles that the Machane Shechinah, the Machane Levi, or Machane Yisrael, in terms of the different categories of holiness, the Mishnah in Kehilim, Perek Aleph, Mishnah Vav, Mishnah Zayin, talks about different regions of different categories of holiness, and of course the Kodesh Kodoshim, the Holy of Holies, where only the Kohen Gadol was allowed to go in, and that was only on Yom Kippur. That Kodesh Kodoshim is over here. And the Heichal is over here, the holiest part. And then you've got the Azara where the Kohanim and the Ezra Mizbeach would prepare the Korbanos over here. And then you've got a slightly lesser category of Kedusha over here where you've got the label Ezras Noshim, no disrespect to the ladies, the men were there as well. They used to mingle, but they made a takona because of the inappropriate socializing, that they would have balconies to look down. And so the Ezras Noshim is of a lesser category. And it's clear from what the Rambam brings down in Hilchos Beis HaBechiyah and Hilchos Beis HaMikdash that the original Issur Kores was really limited to the Kodesh Kodoshim and the Azorah, which is over here, And there's a little gate over here which was called the Nicanor Gate, which is there. And that is where the Issur Kares applies. The rabbis decreed that the Tomei Mace issue should not only go in this area, but also in this area, the Ezras Noshim. So they extended it to the entire perimeter of the Beit HaMikdash. And if you look at the size of the building, you'll see here what looks like a corridor, and that's called the Chil. Some call it the Chil. And that also had the same Kedusha. The Chil is told to us that on the east side, which is this area here, was 10 amos wide. But there are a number of commentaries who say that the Chil was wider on the other side, and we don't know how much. It could have been more than 10 amos, it could have been 20 or 30 amos, which would have extended that area of Kedusha where Tomei Mace was not allowed to enter. So that, in a nutshell, is the Tomei Mace issue. We don't have the Pora Aduma. But we will find as we go along that there are other reasons why we can't go up on the Har HaBayis. And the Tomei Mace issue is not the only one. So the Rambam in Hilchos Beis HaBechira in chapter 7, part 15, and in Bias Mikdosh in Perek Gimel, Halacha Dalad, describes this Issur brought down, indeed in the Gemara Pesachim Samach Zayin, it discusses whether you could bring a corpse into what's called the Machane Leviyah, which is really the more wider area, and because we know that Moshe Rabbeinu brought the bones of Yosef into that area of the Mishkan. But there's the Machane Shechino, which is the real Kodesh Kodoshim and Azara. Then you've got the Machane Leviyot, which is really the rest of the building and the whole of Har HaBayis. And then you've got the whole of Yerushalayim, which is the Machane Yisrael. And Metzora was not even allowed in the Machane Yisrael. He had to leave Jerusalem completely. But the Tomei Mace, as we discussed, and then you've got the Kohanim who would be going up in a state of Tahara, in a state of purity, which we'll discuss in a moment, into Har HaBayis generally. In fact, Rabbi Goren at one stage was said to have argued that we shouldn't allow anybody in the area which he felt was where the Kodesh Kodoshim was, and that's why he wanted it blown up. He wanted it closed to non-Jews as well as Jews, because there is an issur for them as well as for us to go up there. But anyway, he didn't have his way, fortunately, otherwise there'd have probably been a world war. And Josephus writes in his historic account that there were warning signs along the Sorig. The Sorig is this outer balustrade beyond the Chil, and that there were warning signs in Greek and in Latin warning people not to enter any further. And they have some original one of these in the Rockefeller Museum in Jerusalem. Anyway, so that's the idea of Tomei Mace. But there is another issue, and that is this. Tumah isn't only from being in touch with or being in the same building as a corpse. Tumah can also come from a number of other things. If a person is a Baal Keri, he's had a seminal discharge, or he's a Zov, he's got a constant discharge like a gonorrhea or something like that. And then there's the Zovah, a woman who has such a thing. Or if a woman is Nidah. These are all states of ritual impurity. A tibul yom, somebody who has been tomei but has dipped in the mikvah but hasn't yet reached nightfall, so he's got a din where he's got to hold on until the night comes along. So these categories of tumah are also an issue, and not just for what we described as the Machane Shechina, but the whole Machane Leviyah, the whole Levite caste, which is not only the Beit HaMikdash, but the whole of the Har HaBayis, the area surrounding it, in that square 500 by 500 amos. That one cannot go into that area if one is tumah from any of these things. Now, people often mistranslate tumah as being something dirty or something scandalous. Tumah means a state of spiritual unfitness. It means that one is in a state whereby one is not able to perform certain kinds of service. And Rav Hirsch explains this, that these things which make a tumah of matters hayotze migufo, these are things which come out from one's own physical body. And Rav Hirsch explains that these are things which have the potential for life. the idea of the seminal discharge, or the woman who is nida. These are all ideas where there is a potential from this emission to create life. And it was lost. And that is what creates the tumah. It's nothing to do with physical defilement or being dirty or anything like that. So people shouldn't be offended when they're labeled in that way. But these things can be remedied, of course. If you count the seven clean days, then you dip in a mikvah. But what people don't know is that the men's mikvahs we find nowadays are really for Takonas Ezra and don't really cope with this idea. For going on the Har HaBayis, it needs a proper daraisa mikvah like the ones the women use. Or there is the idea of the Mayan, the spring, which is much more than just a mikvah, in order to reach a state of purity, and in order one can go up on the Har HaBayis. Now, it's brought out from a number of sources, the Rambam Bias Mikdosh and Perek Gimel Halacha Ches, that although this is not an Issur Kares, it's an Issur Lo Saseh. And who fancies getting 39 lashes? Besides, if you're not allowed to eat chaza, nobody here will eat chaza, which is a lo sase, just equally is the same seriousness. But in terms of the Har HaBayis in particular, the Tosefta in Shavuos, in Perek Aleph Halacha Beis, says that going up on Har HaBayis in a state of tumah is the worst avera possible. It says, Tumas mikdosh ukadoshav chamura mikol averas sheba Torah. It's greater than all the averas of the Torah, because it's an open defilement against the presence of the Shekhinah. Now, we're going to discuss, is the Shekhinah really there now that the temple is destroyed, or has the Shekhinah gone away? And there is a Machlokes Rishonim about this. There is the Rambam, who writes about Kitcha La'osid Lava. He said that Kedusha, which was attained when the Beit HaMikdash was built by Shlomo HaMelech, that Kedusha stuck forever. It's always there. And the Shekhinah is always there. Whereas when you talk about the Kedusha of Eretz Yisrael, it's a different debate. The Kedusha of Eretz Yisrael was based on Kivush, on conquering the land. And so that is why when we're not all in Eretz Yisrael now, and we haven't got the Beit HaMikdash, so there is the argument that the Kedusha of Eretz Yisrael is lesser than what it was then. Hence certain dinim being called Rabbonon instead of Daraisa. We talk about Trumas, Maestros, but we won't go into that. But the Beit HaMikdash, or the site of the Beit HaMikdash, is a different Kedusha completely, because that's not based on Kivush, says the Rambam. It's based on the presence of the Shekhinah, and that Shekhinah has not gone away. The Ravad disagrees. There, in Hilchos Beis HaBechira, in Perek Vav, Halacha Yudalud, the Ravad, who is also a Rishon, says that he doesn't share the view of the Rambam. He says, now that the Beit HaMikdash is no longer there, he does not regard it to be an Issur Kares to go up there. And the way he words it is brought by Mefarshim to say, well, according to the Ravad, he is still implying that you may not go up there, but there is no Issur Kares to go up there. Fine, thank you very much. I only get 39 lashes. So that is the Ravad. Their dispute is based on Mishnah Nedeos, Perechas Mishnah Vov, and the Gemara in Zavachim Daf Kuf Zayin, which brings there a debate about whether the Shekhinah is prevalent on Har HaBayis, and the Rambam Paskins, Hilchos Beis HaBechira there in Perek Vav, as we said, that there is still the presence of the Shekhinah. Most agree with the Rambam. Shall I say the Rambam? Because we don't say Rambam, not to confuse with the Rambam. The Rambam, Maimonides, is agreed upon by virtually all other Rishonim and by the Acharonim. And this is the list brought down by Rabbi Vadi Yosef in his Yichavedas in Perek Kafov of Chelek Aleph. There he brings the Tosfos in Shavuos, he brings the Sefer Yoreim, he brings Rabbi Meir Rottenberg in Yom HaMemdalud, the Rosh in Yavamas Pei Beis, and numerous other sources, the Sefer Achinuch Shin Shaman Beis, the Ramban in Shavuos Teslain, the Rashba in Megillah Yud, the Ritva, the Rashbat. It's a huge shopping list. And the Binyan Tzion, Rav Ettinger, he says that if you look carefully at the words of the Ravad, even according to him, you don't go up nowadays on Har HaBayis. The Mogen Avraham is perhaps one of the main Acharonim who stress that one may not go up there, and this is brought in Hilchos Tisha B'Av, in Tov Kuf Samach Aleph, And the Avnei Nezer talks about it, the Binyan Sion in Chelek A, Simon Beis, the Radvaz in Simon Lamed Ches. Some of the protagonists who claim that you're allowed to go on Har HaBayis, they like to quote Rabbi Avraham Cook, who was the first chief rabbi of Israel, and who was very much in favor of building up the Yishuv. But Rav Cook makes it clear in his Shalosh Shulos Mishpat Kohen Siman Sadi Vov that it's also to go up on Har HaBayis, and in fact he testified in front of what was called the Shaw Commission, a British government initiative to look into the issues relating to Jerusalem back at that time after the Balfour Declaration, and he testified that for thousands of years we've been praying at the Western Wall, at the Kotel HaMaravi, and he said that Bechlet is also to go up on Har HaBayis, it is forbidden. So the many people who try to quote him and say he said it's alright, they are mistaken. Yes, and then it was dealt with by the Kohen on their behalf. Now there are those who argue.
Didn't you say before that Rabbi Goren didn't want anybody to go on Harabai?
Yeah.
That there was two of
non-Jews. No. He wanted what he considered the area of the Kodesh Kodoshim closed up to everybody, and his view was that it's. That was in the Omar Mosque, the Dome of the Rock.
Right.
But there are others who disagree with that. No, there's a separate issa for non-Jews to enter the Mikdosh. But it's not based on Tumah. Those who argue in favor of going up in Harabai like to quote the Rambam. Because the Rambam is brought down as saying, he records in a diary style that on a Tuesday, on the fourth day of Cheshvan in the year 4926, Yotzonu me'Akko, we made a journey from the city of Akko, Lalos, Yerushalayim, v'nichnasti, and I entered l'bayis hagodol l'hakodosh. Those are his exact words. V'ispalal tibo, and I prayed there. And he said it was like a Yom Tov. Now, people say, oh, you see, he went to the site of the Beis HaMikdosh. But that's not what the Rambam says. He says, I entered the Beis HaGodol VaHaKodosh. Well, there was no temple in the Rambam's time. We know that. There was no temple at all. And he said, just like I prayed in Jerusalem in its desolation, so please God speedily in my days, I should pray in Jerusalem when it's rebuilt. And the Minchas Yitzchok Dine Rice brings down in Chelek Hay Siman Aleph of its Teshuvas that people completely misinterpret the Rambam. It's held that there was a shul just next to the Har HaBayis, so that they had an outlook onto it through a window, and that gave them a feeling of chizuk when they were davening, because they were davening so close, but in no way were they davening on it. Indeed, when you look throughout history over many years, because before 1948 we could get into the Old City. Alright, the British were restrictive, but before the British were in charge, there was the Ottoman Empire for many years. There was no restriction of putting a shul up there, and yet there was never such a thing occurring.
The Jews were not allowed to go to Jerusalem at all. They were actually expelled completely.
Yeah, but there's a sefer which is brought down by Baron Weiss called Sefer Chazon Nachum, which was written in the 1600s, and who asks, why is it that Jewish people are not davening nowadays on the Har HaBayis when we do, he said that when we do have access to it, and the Arabs were not in control of it. And his answer is what we're going to come to in a moment, in terms of how we are all Tomei nowadays, regarded as Tomei, even if we have dipped in the mikveh. That's really the next issue. But before I get to that, the Rambam has been misinterpreted. The Meiri is also quoted in Gemara Shavuos Tesaim, that he said he heard that there are some who had the custom to go up to pray on Har HaBayis, and he seems to be following the view of the Ravad, and lots of commentaries say the Meiri got it wrong. The Chazon Ish says that he regards what the Meiri writes as a printing mistake. The Meiri was published many years later after they found the manuscript, and the Chazon Ish just rubbished it. They also are quoting Rav Moshe Feinstein, claiming that he said that you can go up on Har HaBayis. If you look at Rav Moshe Feinstein in his Tshuva Zigras Moshe Chelik Beis, And there he is asked the question of whether one is allowed to spit in the area of the Har HaBayis. And when you read the Igros Moshe, he's been taken out of context. Although there are people who have been closely related who claim they could go up there on certain parts, but they were condemned by the other Rabbonim. The Radvaz, who writes about calculating the position of the Har HaBayis, because he claims that the Even Shusio is in what is now the Dome of the Rock, many disagree with him, and this is brought by the Tzitz Eliezer in Sefer Derech HaKodesh, and he shows how, according to a number of views, the Even Shusio is in a different place, a large rock which projected above ground level, and where that is now, he said ground levels have changed, and this whole idea of it projecting three etzpos above ground level cannot be used nowadays. The Minchas Yitzchok shows that the Radvaz actually he contradicted himself, and even Rabbi Gorin agreed that Even Shusio is not where everybody thinks it is. So the problem is, where was Har HaBayis? Where is it now? If it's 500 by 100 amos, which is 62,500 square meters, the Har HaBayis is now 145,500 square meters. We don't really know. There's no way of knowing. And Rav Kook, who so many of the protagonists who want to go up there like to quote, he is recorded having said that one small trespass on Har HaBayis negates the whole merit of establishing millions of settlements in Eretz Yisrael, which we should try to do. So Dine Weiss goes into some detail in his Shuvas on this, quoting the Kafta of Aferach, who wrote 370 years ago that all Har HaBayis is regarded as Machane Leviyah, and we don't know where it is. And even if people dip in the mikveh and they're not always worried about the din of chatzitza, and this is also brought by Rav Grossberg in Noam volume 11, he says you shouldn't even take one step on Har HaBayis, because once you go in there, you're on a slippery slope, forgive the pun. And the Minchas Yitzchok writes, also af pasio achas levad, just even one step, ad shiovo Mashiach. There is in fact somebody who is a well-known halachist archaeologist called Reb Aryeh Kimmelman, and he says once you've worked out all the permutations of where Har HaBayis could be, you're really in trouble even just after one step. And Rav Avadia Yosef comes along with a similar view. He says, although a Tomimase is not barred from all the areas of Har HaBayis, he says, people will stray. What have you got once you let people go up there? The tourists, we all know how they're dressed, some of them. We know that they're not going to take the idea of mikveh seriously. And they will go up there. They don't know the location. He said, you're dicing with death. And he brings this in his Yabia Omer Chelek Vov, Simon Chaflov, Saf Chafhei, and it's Yechavidas Alef Chaflov. And as you don't know, then why do you have to take these chances? And even after a tevila for a mitzvah, he says, other people will follow. They say, well, if he goes up there, then it's all right. Then I can go up there. And they won't go through the same precautions of avoiding what seems to be the main Kodesh Kadoshim Azora area. They're not in a state of proper purity. And a similar idea is brought by Rav Waldenberg in the Tzitz Eliezer, in the Chelek Yud Siman Aleph, Chelek Yud Aleph, Siman Tesvov. He says, Osa Lishmoa Divrei Hevel Ha'ele. One must not listen to these vanity words of those who proclaim that you can go up on Har HaBayis. He says, it's a kafira, a chilul HaKodesh, b'mokam HaMekdosh. It is absolutely like kafira. That's what he says. And in 1994, Jordan signed a peace agreement with Israel, and Rav Eliyahu, the Sadi chief rabbi, he aspired to building a shul on Har HaBayis, on the areas where he felt certain that it was not in the Machane Leviyah. And he nevertheless said that although I would like to put a shul there, I can't control who enters it. He says, we can't stand outside with a clipboard and ask somebody who said, have you had a seminal discharge? We can't stand outside with a clipboard and ask a woman, are you menstruating or have you been to the mikveh since? You can't stand outside with a clipboard and ask a woman, have you had intimate marital relations in the last 3 days? she's been to mikvah, but if she's had marital relations the last 3 days, then she's got a man's semen, and that also disqualifies her. All these different things, you know, there's no way you can do this when you're admitting entry. And once you let in one, you're going to let in everybody.
So when the temple is rebuilt, those questions will arise. Right? How do we deal with it then?
You're very aware of it because you can
wait for the show.
There was originally some form of guards outside discreetly asking people, I don't know how they framed their questions, to make sure that they were fit to enter. Yeah. And maybe it was just some sort of border control, ticking boxes. Presumably, in the future, by some mikdash, there'll be some electronic device outside where you will just
you'll be
scanned. And,
I'm sure the women.
Yeah, no doubt, the women of the wall will have something to say about it. So what we've done is we've spoken about the ideas of tomei mate. We've spoken about the idea of being tomei from one's own discharges, but there are a number of other issues which remain to be discussed. Number three, every person who is an amoret is given a din of zov. What does that mean? When it comes to tumah, the Tosfos in Shabbos Tesvov talks about this, that since nowadays we don't practice the laws of tumah and tahara, we're not mindful of them as a routine, then we all have the status of amoret. So it's nothing derogatory, and although an amoret means literally an ignoramus, we are all regarded in halacha as amorets when it comes to tumah and tahara, because we're not conscious of the laws of purity, and therefore we are all forbidden to enter harabais for that reason. So in addition to the fact that we spoke about tumah and tumah, that even if you don't have this tumah, and this is the Sefer Chazon Nochum, he said, why didn't the Jews daven there? This was in the 1600s. He says, because people don't care about tumah. Amei Oretz are not careful. There's the whole thing about Maisa. You can't trust an Amei Oretz with Maisa. Although if he says he Maisa, if it's Shabbos, if it's not Shabbos, he won't lie on Shabbos. But that's another issue. But the Amei Oretz is not particular about tumah and tahara. We don't eat terumah nowadays. We don't drink korbanos nowadays. And therefore, we're simply not careful. And therefore, we all have a din of zov. So you can say, Zov can go to mikveh. He counts 7 days. And so he's had his discharge. And now he's counted 7 days. And he goes to mikveh. So surely he's all right. But because nowadays we are all regarded like Amei Haoretz, we all are considered like Zov, even though we're not Zov. Even though we've been to mikveh. And that is an additional problem, which is brought down by Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank in his Mikdash Melech, that we don't have now the practice of the laws of purity, therefore we must all regard ourselves as Zov. Then there's a fourth issue, and that is this. The Pasuk says, Shabsosai tishmaru ves mikdashi tira'u. So you will keep my Shabbos, and you will fear my Mikdash. There's such a thing as maro mikdash, of having fear, having reverence, when you go into the sides of the Beis HaMikdash, and this is brought by the Rambam in Hilchos Beis HaBechira, Perek Zayin, Halacha Aleph, Halacha Beis, that one has to have a respect for the sanctity of Har HaBayis generally, which is the whole area, and we don't know where Har HaBayis is now, so it means the whole of Har HaBayis. One has to have a respect so much so that you're not allowed to go up there if there is no purpose, no mitzvah in going up there. Now, the people who want to go up there saying, of course I'm going up there for a mitzvah, I'm going up there to daven. But Rabbi Avraham Yosef points out that nobody has a chiyuv to go up there to daven. You can daven at the kotel. You can daven anywhere. Hashem will listen to your prayers if you've got the right kavana. It's not a question of where you are, it's a question of who you are. So there is a respect for the sanctity, and there are a number of issues here. When you go up on Har HaBayis, even if you're in a state of Tahara, even if there is no issue about the Zob like we discussed in issue number 3, you're not allowed to wear shoes, you're not allowed to carry a stick, you're not allowed to have money, well, you're not allowed to have an exposed sort of wallet or handbag. If the money is hidden inside you, the Rambam says it's okay. Yeah, there's a Mishnah in Brachos, in Perek Tes, Mishnah Hay. You can't have dust on your feet. You can't use Har HaBayis as a shortcut. You can't spit on it, as we said. And these issues are brought out in particular, strangely enough, on Hilchos Beis HaKnesses, on the laws relating to a shul. It says with a shul, you're not allowed to go into a shul to wind up ropes, to spread nets, to make a shortcut. And there is a Gemara. Ravina and Ravada were asking questions to Rava, and it started raining heavily. So they went into the shul, which would act as a shelter. And Rava said, we're not going into the shul in order to shelter. We're going into the shul now to answer your shilas, to answer your questions. Because it's very important that you're not using a shul for any kind of secular purpose. You can't eat in a shul, you can't drink in a shul. Oh, what about the chassidim? Well, they call it a Beis HaMedrash, which they're living in, and so that's another issue. So you can have your tish in the Beis HaMedrash when you're amongst the chassidim. But there's a general issue of reverence. You can't have kalos rosh, you can't have sicha b'teilo, idle chatter, to talk about anything. The Ba'a Heitav writes, in Hilchos Beis HaKnesses, that the Ari HaKadosh did not want to give his droshes in the main shul, but in a side room. Why? Because he said, if I crack a joke in my shir, that in itself is sicha b'teilo, and I'm not allowed to do sicha b'teilo in a shul. So if a shul is just called a mikdash ma'at, then you've got a kal v'chomer here. A kal v'chomer, that how much more so you have to observe these restrictions on the Har HaBayis, which is a much more holy place where you need this din of Murray mikdash. And the Minchas Chinuch writes, 254:15, that even according to the Ravad, who says there's no Kedusha from the Mikdosh, from the Shekhinah, he holds that this rule remains on Har HaBayis, to have the Merah B'Mikdosh. And therefore, that's the fourth issue, that people, if we allow people to go up there, the tourists come in their thousands, they will have their video cameras, of course, they will be dressed in inappropriate manner, they will not be respecting, of course, the rules of Tum and Tahara, but they'll be joking and laughing, and unfortunately, even when you daven at the Kotel, the way people are shouting around, it's like a railway station platform. But it's got a din of Beis HaKnesses.
The Israeli government is allowing that. It doesn't stop people going on that.
Well, the Israeli government was using the Rabbanut. It was politically expedient in 1967 for the government to go along with what the Rabbanut was saying. The Rabbanut said, don't go up there. And the government wanted to appease the Arabs. Moshe Dayan's attitude was, okay, we capture lots of land, but we will sit down and negotiate and try and get a peace agreement. A real optimist, you might say. And that's what the situation was then. As the years have gone by, there has been the growing nationalist movement, Gishemunim, and the settler movement, who have been trying to stop the Muslims feeling that they are in control of Har HaBayis. And they feel that's a very reasonable aspiration. We don't want the Muslims to feel that they own it. It hasn't been theirs from times immemorial like ours was. In fact, it's on record that King David bought this land. Every issue where there's an argument, Yosef Shechem and the Maris HaMachpelah with Avram, those places are arguing out, we actually bought it. Nobody disputes what the Bible says. So we've got very strong claims. And we can understand these claims, that we don't want the Muslims to feel as though they're in charge. But we've got to have halachic issues here, and not political ones. And halachically, there is no requirement for us to be up there now. We don't need to go up there. We can daven anywhere. And we've got all these halachic issues, which we've discussed, which people seem to be sidestepping. And these are the gedolim. You know, there is a certain website which lists the rabbonim who say you can't go up there, and then tries to list those rabbis who say you can go up there. And if you go through this list of rabbis who say you can go up there, and you look back to their sources, you realize that they didn't really say that. Rav Cook and the others I mentioned, they quote there some Rav Fisher from the Eder Charedis who said you can go up there. I know for a fact he said you can't go up there. So there's a lot of political propaganda going on, and it's inevitable in a topic such as this that we're going to get politics. There is even a view that the area of the Kotel is a no-go area. But that's a very minority view. The Brisker Rav would not go near to the Kotel, and his followers as well. Some say he kept 2 amas away because he felt that the Kotel was the actual wall of the Azara and not just of Har HaBayis. So he kept a couple of amas away. And the other Briskers who say no, that whole Kotel Plaza they keep away from, because they're worried. We don't really know where Har HaBayis was. There was tampering around. But Rav Moshe Feinstein says you can't really follow that view. Why? Because if you've got a place which was used as a Beit HaKnesses for so many, many years, which the Kotel has been, then we've got a chazaka that it's okay to go there. There is another shaila about sticking your fingers inside the Kotel. Because if the Har HaBayis starts at the edge of the wall, then people who put their little bit of slips of paper inside might be transgressing entering Har HaBayis. Part of a body is like a whole body. Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach said we can be lenient on this, and he said in Teltel Piot, page 27, we're not worried about people putting their fingers in, but there are some who are makbid not to. And the generally accepted view is that the Kotel is the wall of the Har HaBayis, for the structural surveyors amongst us, it's a retaining wall. But there are those, like the Ridvaz and Rav Yeshua Yosef Kolbo, who held that the Kotel is the wall of the Azara, and therefore you should keep a distance of 2 or 3 amas from the Kotel itself. Now, we've spoken about the different views. If you want to find a heter for something, Rabbi Cooper used to say, if you want to find a heter for something, you'll always find a heter. But if you want to find the MS, that's not always so easy. It was one of his favorite quotes, and I always remember it. You know, if somebody offers you a glass of water and says, listen, there may be a bit of arsenic in it. I'm only 50-50 certain because some arsenic fell down in the room next door, and there may be some in it. Would you drink it? I mean, you're talking here about dicing with death. And therefore, the guidance we've got, and we've got here the Gedolim, Dain Weiss and the Minchas Yitzchok, Rabbi Avadi Yosef, and who himself was on the Rabbanut, the Tzitz Eliezer, Rav Waldenberg, they're all very clear cut in saying what a huge risk you have in going up on Har HaBayis. And so Rav Avadia finishes off one of his teshuvas on this. He says, we have to warn everybody who is visiting Jerusalem not to go up on Har HaBayis. And this is a Dvar Halacha, and we have to teach according to those poskim Hashem Itiyam Anu Chaim and Mehem Anu Shosim. We live by their words and we drink by their water, Viratzon, and please Hashem, Shikon Bonu Bimhera HaKosov, may the verse come fruitful, Zorakti Aleichem, mine to Harim Utaharatem. Veniske Chulonu, we should all merit, Lalos the Tzion, to God, to Zion, Berino, Besimchas Olam, in joy and happiness, Avashem, Bevinam, Besachachachainu, Besipatenu, and may tomorrow night, Tishabav, be a Yom Tov, Amen.